ladies and gentlemen, welcome to season 4, episode 6 of Power T Talk. We're coming to you with more preview. This time we were lucky enough to get the listeners involved. We're doing a mailbag episode. We got questions on Vol Nation about Tennessee's football season. We're thinking about the first game. We're going to preview that a little bit more on Sunday in between the weekend games. But today it's questions about the whole season. So we were able to get, I don't know, a good amount of questions. It seems like 15 or 20 from our listeners. You guys are awesome, and we're excited to answer these questions. Zach and I originally came up with a short list of questions that we were going to try and tackle in an episode in the middle of the week. Luckily, you guys came through. Your questions are way better than ours. Some of these are awesome, and we're going to try to get through all of them. Some of them kind of repeated, so we're going to just do the first version of the ones we saw. But these are great all around. Then we're going to do some quick around the NCAA, like 3 or 4 questions. And then we're excited to do this. We're going to pick 6 games from this weekend. There are some pretty good matchups, and some of them involve SEC teams. So we're going to pick at the end. Then we're going to go. We're probably going to go for about an hour today. So we have podcasts coming to you all week leading up to football. And in less than 24 hours, we have 2 top 10 teams that will be in action. Zach, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm glad to, you know, get back on the podcast here. We had originally decided just to wait to do a full Tennessee preview till Sunday, but I felt this was the right decision here that we go ahead, get a mailbag involved, get listeners involved, and have a real fun episode. This is going to be more free flowing, maybe not, you know, as much preview, just some questions that you guys asked, and we'll be glad to answer for you.
Yeah, so we'll probably have a few where we disagree, almost certainly. And the preview episodes that we prepared, we really looked at stats. We looked at, you know, where we thought people would fall in the depth chart. We went back and looked at recruiting rankings. This is going to be more kind of stream of consciousness. What do you think is going to happen? We're guessing on some of this stuff, but that's what makes it fun. That's what makes the preseason fun. We'll start to learn the answer to some of these Monday night against Georgia Tech. But some of these are going to be things we track all season, and we're also going to keep track of the picks all season. So, Zach, if you're ready to go, I'll start with the first question.
Let's go. Give me the first question here, sir.
So the first question was from Vol Nation user Great White North, who always asks good questions. He's really thoughtful about Tennessee. Really entertaining poster whenever he ventures into the football forum. His question is, he gives us an over-under of 12 plays on offense before Quentin Dormady keeps the ball on a read option play. So you get to pick over or under.
I'm going to go with over with a caveat. I think we'll see him and take the ball on a read option on 12 designed run plays. But I think the game plan is going to be really him getting involved early in the passing game. So I think you're going to see 7, 8, 9 passes in that first couple drives.
So overall plays, you and I have talked this week, and you really think that the number one goal almost is to just get him in a rhythm throwing the ball at different levels. So I think overall plays, I think you're right, and I'm actually going to go a little further. I think it's going to be over 12 run plays, and I don't think that's necessarily going to be the pattern all year, but I think for game one, we're going to see Butch Jones do what he does sometimes, where the quarterback's just not a part of the run game. And that's not to say he won't be all year, but if he can beat Georgia Tech without showing that hand, I think that's what we're going to see. It's probably going to frustrate me. It's probably going to frustrate our listeners. I don't think QD is going to run the ball.
I think he will a couple times. He's not Justin Worley. He's not a statue, which I think he's getting the rep for because they're both white, to be blunt about it. So I think he has a little bit more ability than people will lead on in terms of the running game and whatnot. I do think Tennessee is not going to feature it this game, though. I don't think he's going to have 8, 9, 10 design carries. He's not going to be Joshua Dobbs. And I also have the feeling that in third and short, goal-to-go situations, that there will be a package for Garantano.
So that's the one thing. I want to do a follow-up off of Great White North's question. And I just came up with this myself, but it was motivated by him. Who do you think keeps the ball first on a read option, Dormady or JG?
So I think Garantano is going to play in situations Tebow-like packages. And so I think Garantano is going to get something on the first or second drive if Tennessee needs a third and short or a first to go. So I'll go with Garantano there. I think that's a good decision. I think you can do a 2-quarterback system as long as you know who the established starter is. I saw a stat. It was a great thread on Vol Nation about the 2 quarterbacks, and I saw a stat that Tebow kept the was the quarterback for 22% of the snaps. If Garantano could do that, I think that would be a great divide there for Tennessee. I think that'd be a great balance.
Yeah, and I do think that, I don't know if it'll happen in Georgia Tech, so I'm definitely taking the over, but I do think that when we get in the red zone, I think QT's a big boy. I think he can move a little bit of a pile. I think he's going to be one who's tough, and he's not going to be afraid to keep. So there will be – I don't know if it will be like a QB power, but there will be times where he keeps the ball, he initiates some contact, and he tries to get in the end zone. Another follow-up I had, and just focus – while we're focused on the quarterback position, because we get away from that in a little while, really quick, and then we'll get back to the listener questions – what do you think Quinton Dormady's completion percentage will be? And I give you the over-under of 63%, which was Dobbs' mark in 2016.
I'm going to go with the over. I think he's going to be very efficient. I think he'll be better in short passes. One thing Dobbs struggled with was getting the ball out quick and throwing it accurately. There were too many times where the ball didn't get to a wide receiver on a screen or it went behind a back. I think QD cleans that up, and I think he'll be right around 65% for the year.
So one thing that I think he's going to have to rely on if he's going to be successful in that regard is I think we're going to need a reliable tight end target. We're going to need Wolf to step up. And Catbone, a poster in the football forum, asked the question, behind Ethan Wolf, we have a very, very unproven Jakob Johnson, which is absolutely true. And he says, will he be able to really contribute, speaking of Johnson?
I don't think as a pass catcher he will, Daniel. I think he would be more used as an H-back. If Tennessee goes under center, which we might get to in just a minute, I think he'll be used more as an H-back kind of player. I think if we have a second tight end, we're going to target other than Wolf. I think it's going to be Latrell Bumpus as that second tight end.
I think if we're actually thinking a true second tight end, as in getting open over the middle, trying to get that just above the linebacker's level that we like to hit sometimes in this offense, I think that is going to be either Ethan Wolf or the his brother or Bumpus. I don't think that's going to be Johnson. I think Johnson's going to be in there like we talked about. If we're going to do a run package, especially for Dormady on the goal line, I think you see Johnson come in the game, and I think people are going to know what's happening, but I think we can execute. And I want to follow up really quickly on what you just said. Darth Shiveman asked the question, how many snaps do we see our QBs take under center in week one? So we've talked about this before. I'm curious about it. How many snaps under center do we see against Georgia Tech?
Got a little bit of a hot take. I'm going to go with over 10.
Interesting. So do you think that's a Larry Scott change, or do you think that's just that we want to show him something different? We have someone besides Dobbs now.
I think that's a Larry Scott change. I think you're going to see about 10 to 15 snaps under center this year. I think that was there was a reason that Larry Scott was brought in, a specific reason. I think it was more under center stuff and more pro-style pass sets, which Scott has worked with Al Golden, with Jim Levitt, both who ran pro-style offenses. So I really think that's kind of where I'm getting that at. I did watch a Miami game from when Scott was head coach, and they did go under center a good bit.
I actually am going to disagree, and it's purely – I think it's Butch Jones' offense. I really do. And the reason I think that we're not going to end up under center is because I think John Kelly – is really good at finding space when he has the patience from the shotgun. Those type of run plays, I think he's going to succeed. Not that he couldn't succeed in an I form downhill. I think he'd be great at it. But I think he's going to find success, and then it's going to be kind of a if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Maybe if we start to get stuffed in the run game, we try to run downhill. But I think for now, the two backs that I want to see us feature are better if we're in the spread, and I think that's what we're going to see. Speaking of... TN Hopeful 505 asks, 30 rushing plays a game. So that's around what we might see. How do you split them between Kelly, Jordan, CFA, and Ty Chandler?
So I think we're going to run more than 30 times a game. Usually
I actually agree. So if you want to do 40, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee usually does, 80 plays a game, I think, on average. Maybe a little bit lower, 75 to 80, when they're really humming. So I say, I decided to put a percentage on it. I put 66% for Kelly, and then the other backs will just, you know, divvy them up. Probably Chandler will be the number two. I think if you put, you know, 30 carries and or 30 rushing plays for the running backs a game, Kelly's going to get 20 of them.
So when we talked in one of the preview episodes, you had Kelly pegged for not the record or anything, but 1,200, 1,300 yards. And part of the reason I pushed back on that was I didn't know if he'd get the volume. Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe if Chandler emerges, he's going to get a little bit less and we're going to see more Chandler?
Yeah, I think that's highly possible. I mean, I'm not – maybe not highly possible. I think that is definitely something that can happen. You know, Ty Chandler is dynamic. He is very impressive in the open field. So it's something I think that you will see. I think Butch is going to rely heavily on Kelly in the first couple games, making sure you know the running backs, the freshman running backs, Chandler and Jordan, and then sophomore Phils and me, you know, will protect the football, won't blow assignments and pass protection, things like that. There, that's why I think Kelly is going to get a lot of snaps, you know, in the first couple games.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's got to be able to trust those guys. They've got to start understanding pass pro. They've got to kind of get their feet wet. I do think overall it's going to be Kelly getting about 75-80% of the carries. I think a lot of the rest are going to go to Chandler. Hopefully we have some games where there's a little bit more of a gap between us and the other team and we get CFA and Jordan and Chandler more involved. I'd like to see Kelly be able to rest a little bit. We know he's going to get the bulk. It's just a matter of how strongly Chandler comes on, because I think he's the one whose talent right now is in that stratosphere where he can make an impact as a freshman. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the interesting thing will be to see how involved the backs are in the passing game, because that was something that Hurd and Kamara were really good at, was in the passing game. You know, taking screens, running in the flat, especially Kamara going out wide and making plays with slant routes and quick hitches and in and outs. So I'm really curious to see if the backs are going to be featured in that, whether that's Chandler or Kelly. I think Kelly could probably do that, not to the level of Kamara. I mean, Kamara was just an absolute stud doing that. But I think that's going to be interesting to watch to see if a Chandler or if
We're going to need him to be. I mean, I think given already our concerns about depth at tight end, we're going to talk a little bit about the wide receivers in a minute. We're going to need those guys to be a factor in the passing game. Before we get there, one of the big concerns in this offseason, and part of it's due to injuries, but we're hopefully getting some guys back, is defensive tackle. Tennessee Tar Heel asks, will Paul Bain see increased playing time this season? So maybe it's depth. Maybe he comes on a little bit stronger. Is he going to be involved in the depth chart?
I don't see it, because Tennessee's actually pretty solid at defensive tackle. So the two deep was McKenzie and Vickers, Tuttle, and then Alexis Johnson. You know Matthew Butler's going to play some. You know Quay Pekau is going to play a little bit. And then you got Eric Crosby, too. I just don't see, unless major injuries happen again, Paul Bain's going to play anymore. And hopefully he doesn't. No offense to Paul Bain, but he's a walk-on. So if your scholarship guys are healthy and playing well, then there's no need for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if he'll get in the mix. And if he does, that means we got bit by the injury bug big time. So I hope he comes on strong, and I hope he pushes everyone. But I hope that we don't see him, because that means Tuttle's healthy. That mm-hmm. means Alexis Johnson's coming along. That means Matthew Butler slid inside a little bit. That's what I'd prefer to see.
Yeah, I think go ahead. And excuse our blasphemy, Vol Nation, for beseeching the great name of Paul Bain. But I think one of the more positive things on the depth chart was seeing that Alexis Johnson was the second team.
Right. Let's see. So I think I'm going to combine a few, and I'm going to ask all of them, but it's going to lead to a discussion. So the first question I'll ask from Irwin Jr. Vol 88, love him as a listener, love his energy. All these guys are great. Irwin posted multiple questions, and I appreciate it so much. Lots of chatter about Jumper, he says. Do you guys think he will continue to improve this season, or will Batuli or Ignat assume the lion's share of middle linebacker duties? And I think there's another name that's gotten in the mix there.
Yeah, Dylan Bates, which was maybe the most surprising thing on the depth chart, was seeing Dylan Bates as the backup linebacker. The one thing I've noticed about Butch Jones's depth charts is he won't put freshmen on for the first game.
Yeah.
To kind of... You know, I think his thinking is to kind of blend in. Like, I would be shocked if Phils Wamie is actually the number two back over Ty Chandler. So I think maybe Will Ignat might be more the number two than Bates. And I'm hoping Ignat will be. Now, to the main question that was, will Jumper improve? No, yes and no, because he got better last year. There's no doubt about that. He was bad in 2015, and I think you could say he was slightly below average last year. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm with you there.
Right. He's just going to struggle. He's just not big enough to be effective in the run game. Like, his pass coverage was better. His tackling was better. He looked a little quicker making decisions, but he's just going to be, if he plays and he's a starter and gets 60, 70 snaps, it's just, you've got a hole there at middle linebacker and it's trying to stop the run.
So on the topic of linebackers, we have a couple questions that are asking about the depth that we see, and part of it's that he might not put freshmen on there, but there is something to be desired on the depth chart in that two deep. And I've been concerned all offseason about the linebacker depth, and obviously the Kirkland injury doesn't help, but it's more than that. There's more going on. So Wickman asks, and there's two of these related questions, and I think I'm going to go ahead and ask them both. Wickman asks, with lack of depth at the linebacker position but strong recruiting, what is the future for Tommy Thigpen? So I'm going to let you answer that one first.
That's a tough one, because I think if you were going to make a move, it would have been this year to do it, because Shoup got his guys in. I mean, Thigpen's a pretty solid coach. I mean, I don't think anyone was complaining about the linebacker play till last year when all the injuries hit. I think that's fair. It is disturbing that we were playing, that Colton Jumper's playing so much over guys like Dylan Bates, Daniel Patulli, you know, even Elliot Berry. I think that's a little concerning there. But, I mean, I want to see what happens this year. You got Austin Smith back. You got Corte Sapp back. You know, could Patulli take a leap here? I think Thigpen has had three good years with linebackers, and last year was bad. There's no doubt about it. It was the weakest part of our team. But let's see what happens here.
So Orange by Birth kind of follows what Wickman says and says, okay, Jones gets a lot of credit for recruiting. He says, why does Jones get so much credit for recruiting when we still have so many holes on this roster? I think so many overstates it a little bit, but we do have some holes on this roster. And I have an answer to this, but what do you think? Why does he get so much credit for recruiting when we still see some things coming into the season that make us a little queasy?
I think the recruiting's pretty good. I mean, I think the one issue I have is there's not a big-time wide receiver. I know Jennings is really good, but he's kind of missed on a couple big-time wideouts. And I think the linebacker depth, the stars are there, but obviously the quality hasn't been. And, you know, maybe there should be a bigger-time corner. But, I mean, the defensive line is stacked with stars. The offensive line has multiple five-stars and high four-stars. John Kelly should have been a high four-star based on who was recruiting him and his production so far. And both quarterbacks had big-time scholarship offers. So I think really the only big holes, I think, on this team are linebacker and corner are really only the big holes there. I mean, everything else looks pretty solid. Maybe defensive end depth, even though there's a lot of stars there. But I think I'm pretty confident in the depth of this team. I just think last year was a once-in-a-generation injury bug.
So the thing with the recruiting, I think, is there's a couple positions that leave something to be desired. But overall, for me, I think he's recruiting fine. I think he's getting us high ranked. And I think that, in a sense, that perception on 247 and where we're ranked, perception is reality in some ways. I think the problem comes with player development. And with the player development, I think that's why he changed staff. I think that's why he brought in different assistants. I think that's why he got a guy like Hoke, kind of got some new blood in there, especially with Shoup's input. I don't think it's a recruiting problem. I think I'm fine giving Butch Jones credit for recruiting. He clearly gets guys energized about this program on the recruiting trail and when he brings them to campus. The concern I have is player development, and we've talked about it a little bit in our previews. We have some star recruits that just haven't been the flash players that we need, and we see them on other teams that are ranked really highly, and we don't have them yet. It's not that they weren't ranked high. It's just that we have to bring them on campus. We have to continue to develop them. And I think we have to remember that we put a lot of guys in the NFL draft last year, and that was like those were Butch Jones recruits. So there's some holes in the roster, but there was a lot of turnover. We don't know how the season's going to go. As long as we stay healthy, it's going to be okay, and we're going to continue to put guys in the league, I think.
I agree. I think that the issues mainly are just, it's more glaring than anything. I think you just look at middle linebacker and go, why do we have a walk-on starting? Or you look at corner and go, okay, Justin Martin and Emmanuel Moseley are both seniors but have had inconsistencies. Why are they still there? I think that's the bigger issue than anything else is it just feels like the holes are more glaring than they actually are. I think our offense is top-notch. Other than maybe not having that five-star big-time wideout, I really do think that we have a ton of offensive talent starting from the line to running back.
So Nomads 1-1 asks, what has the offensive staff done to prepare for the season, and what's the one thing they need to focus on? So we've talked a little bit about the changes in the offensive staff. We've talked at length about the quarterback. But coming into the season, what's the one thing that the staff on the offense need to focus on that's going to make us successful this year?
I think what I'm interested in terms of the offensive staff and what they've done to prepare is I really think the wideouts this year are going to be more involved and pass schemes, pro pass schemes. So I think in the past we've had that issue, Daniel, where it's kind of been basic offensive football. And so what I think is going to happen this year, I think you're going to see more smash concepts, some more double posts, some more quick hitches, more pass-based pro routes this year so Dormandy can get comfortable and the wideouts can really show what they can do.
I like that. I really do. And I think – and you kind of already said it, especially if we go to more under center. I think that pro influence could come from Larry Scott. If that's the change we made, I'm actually going to be really happy. I think the number one thing they need to focus on is getting Dormandy comfortable passing the football. And I don't mean to sound obvious. I don't mean to sound like I'm being sarcastic. I think in game one, the reason that we don't see read option necessarily is because I think they're going to test what he can do. I think he's going to have a couple shots deep. I think he's going to try and get a rapport going with Jennings. I think we're going to see if he can hit that little pass over the linebackers to the tight end. I think we're going to let Dormandy sling it. I think that's what they need to focus on. I think that's what makes or breaks this season. And right now, you have faith in QD, and I'm trying to leap onto that faith, and I hope Monday night makes me do it. I think that's what makes or breaks this season. And it's not all him. I'm not throwing pressure on the guy. Mm-hmm. But if Dormandy can do these three-step drops, if he can get in a rhythm and he can throw it, our offense is rolling. Because if we have a rhythm passing game and then we hit you with John Kelly and we hit you with a young Ty Chandler, we're going to score on you. And we saw that last year. When we get rolling at the pace we want, we're going to score on you. We're going to embarrass you deep. And we're going to have success in the run game. We just need a quarterback that can hit those throws and keep us ahead of the chains. That's the one thing that I hope clicks. It's not all on one person, but as far as if the staff could wish for something, I think that might be what it is.
We're going to find out, Daniel, if Josh Dobbs made the offense or if the offense made Joshua Dobbs. I think that's going to be the most interesting thing about Butch Jones this year is, okay, he's got his fault, yes, but can he continue to develop good offensive football and develop the quarterback position? Because if Tennessee can improve the quarterback position from a senior NFL-drafted quarterback in Josh Dobbs, I think the SEC East is certainly within reach.
Yeah, I'll agree. You're more optimistic right now, but if we have a young quarterback that is handling business, we're right there with anybody. Because right now, we don't have a quarterback that we can put with Jacob Eason, put with Drew Locke, even put with South Carolina, it's Jake Bentley. But if we suddenly have that, I'm a lot more optimistic. So you mentioned receivers. Catbone asks a question that I know we were both excited about. What's so special about Josh Palmer compared to the other freshman wide receivers that we brought in?
It looks like his size is not only a positive, but he has the athleticism with that size also. So something Tennessee has struggled with before that they haven't had in the past before Malone and Jennings was they didn't have physical wideouts that were also athletic too, like Alabama or Clemson both had, thinking like Calvin Ridley, Mike Williams, Julio Jones going back, Amari Cooper, guys like those. I think Palmer brings not only that 6'3", 210 frame, but he also brings 4'4", 4'5 speed and can separate from a secondary. And I think that's really going to be something that will be beneficial for Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think when I started watching film on the guy, the size is immediately evident. So he was playing big-time Florida football, but he was bigger than a lot of the corners he was going up against. He was bigger than a lot of the players he was going up against generally. Big, wide shoulders, tall guy. And I don't know. Maybe this translates. Maybe it translates. Maybe it doesn't. But he came into that school in Florida, and his last year he caught 8 touchdowns. So if he just has a nose for the end zone, and in some of these drills in camp where he's going up against older corners, if he's made a couple plays, I don't know. That could be what puts him ahead. The combination of size at 6'3", go up and get it, and a knack for catching the ball in the end zone. When you're a freshman and we need help at wide receiver, that's what you're looking for. That clicks right away. And if there's any sort of rapport with the quarterback, get him in there and let's see what he can do.
Well, the other thing, Daniel, is that he played big time competition. So playing at St. Thomas Aquinas High School, that's one of the top 10 high school football countries in the whole land. So I think what's going to be interesting is he should probably be able to adjust to the talent level because of the level that he played at in high school at Florida.
I think so, too. Another thing we need to talk about is special teams. So just to lead into it, we have a great kick returner. It looks like Callaway was listed as punt returner. I'm okay with that. I'm excited to see what he can do. I think he'll get chances back there. But we saw a surprise on the depth chart at kicker. So Creaker Baller asks, will Medley lose his spot before the year is up, or does – pronounce this kicker's name for me.
It's Brett Simaglia.
So does Brett Simaglia only get some opportunities on longer attempts? So explain what Butch Jones may or may not have said today, and then is that a threat to Medley, or do you really believe that it's just going to be split duties?
So I think the most surprising thing on the depth chart, Daniel, was that Medley was listed as a co-starter with Simaglia. And so that was asked in that question there in the press conference he had today. And basically he said, or hinted at, he didn't come out and say it right out, that Medley is going to be the guy within 40 yards. But anything outside, it looks like Simaglia is going to get a chance to kick those 43, 44, 45-yard field goals and more. We know Medley struggles from outside 40. It's a very hotly debated Tennessee topic. And so I think Simaglia is going to get a chance outside 40.
I think that Simaglia – I mean, if that's already the plan, then I think – If he starts hitting consistently, and if there's any sort of inconsistency from Medley, I could obviously see that being a takeover. But I think for now, I actually trust Medley, and I don't like when we throw him out there for field goals that he's just never made, and we saw that last year. And I know it didn't make you very happy, so I'm actually glad that we have someone who can come in and make a difference on the longer field goal kicks. But for the shorter kicks, I actually started to trust Medley a little bit, and I think that could be a nice little mix.
Within 40, I have complete confidence in Aaron Medley. I think he's really good within that range. I mean, he's a career 52 out of 73. He's only missed one extra point in his career, his freshman year. So, I mean, he's a pretty solid kicker. The issue is just anything outside 40, I don't trust at all. I think he's only hit like 3 or 4 for his career. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it hasn't been good. And anything outside, I don't think he's hit a career.
I like that balance, and I think we'll have a chance to see if it's actually the truth Monday night, but I actually like it. Irwin Jr. Vall asks, he had a bunch of really good questions, and I'm saving my favorite one for last. So, of the 4 big SEC games this season, and he means Florida, Georgia, LSU, and Bama, so the 2 big ones from the East, 2 big ones from the West, are any of those likely wins? Do you think it's possible that we could take Bama into the fourth quarter like we did a couple years ago? So are any of those likely wins, do you think we're going to be favored in any of those games?
I have LSU as a likely win. I think LSU's not very good this year.
So again, I mentioned this the last time we talked about them, and I'm kind of with you. They kind of are the same team they have been for what seems like 5 years. Everyone loves LSU this year, and we get them at home. We're hopefully going to have some guys further along by then. We're going to know what Dormady is. Everyone loves LSU, but based on the perception right now, if I had to pick one of those to be close that people think won't be close at all, it would be LSU. I was kind of thinking the same thing. I think Florida and Georgia are games. I don't think we'll be favored. I think we can win those games. LSU is one that I think nobody would give us a fighting chance right now. And I actually think that they're higher ranked than Georgia or Florida. But so I think the line would be bigger right now. But I think we would have a chance in that game. The one game that I can't talk myself into having a chance is at Alabama.
No, I don't think at Alabama is really – I don't see much of a chance in that game. I think Georgia's very winnable. I think at Florida is a toss-up at this point. But I think LSU, I have it as a win in my season preview, in my season prediction. They only return 9 starters. And let me just say this, and I'll say it again, Danny Etling and Neyland does not scare me. Jacob Eason does. Jalen Hurts does. Not Danny Etling.
Right. And it's a coach that we're pretty much on the record saying, love him as a guy, but he can't coach football very well as a head coach. I mean, I'll say it with this caveat. People are really putting a lot of faith in those coordinators. If for some reason those coordinators have control of everything and really get things rolling, sure. LSU's going to be really good, and they have a great running back. But if it's the same kind of offense that we've seen, they're going to just middle through, and we're going to be able to stay in that game no matter how good their defense is. Let's see. I'm trying to make sure I didn't miss any big ones. So there's one of these that's my favorite, and it was, again, Irwin's Junior Vol 88, I think, had one of the best questions that we've seen. If, like in Madden, you could edit a player's ability rating, you could only do it for one player and one specific ability, so you can crank one of their attributes up all the way, who would it be, and what ability would you boost?
So if we pretended that we kept, like, NCAA football came out and we all celebrated and had a holy day for NCAA football 18, and they had a ranking system, I would probably I'll answer it twofold. I would want to improve Justin Martin and Emmanuel Mosley's cover corner ratings, like man ratings, okay? And then I would just bump up John Kelly to like a 94 or 95 because that's what he should be.
So if I could do one, if I could just choose one, I would probably bump John Kelly's health all the way up.
Put that stamina and that injury at like,
yeah,
99.
Like something, yeah, where he gets to be on the field all the time. He doesn't get tired. He just keeps getting better and better. But then if I could choose, if I could cheat a little bit, I think one that would be probably the biggest help, besides just like, yeah, let's make all the linebackers 99, something a little more reasonable. If I could just make the O-line across the board healthy, I think that's what I would choose. I mean, I know I'm talking about units now, but if I could just make the O-line from where, like, from say we have the 5 healthy guys in the depth, if I could make them healthy and know that we have that unit for every game, that's what I would choose to do.
So my question is this, speaking of the O-line, can I ask you a question? I'm going to throw mine in there.
Do it.
Why? So we know Drew Richmond's suspended, and we haven't mentioned that, and that's just bad job. That's just a bad job by us. Why is Trey Smith not getting any chance as a tackle?
So is it something where you think that he's never going to get any chance at tackle because he's a guard now? Or do you think this is just how this depth chart sits?
I guess it's just how this depth chart – I mean, it's not like right tackle is that much different from right guard. And I don't understand, like, okay, I would rather – no offense to Marcus Tatum. I think he's got a chance to be good. But I would rather put Trey Smith at right tackle than Bulwer and Jones at the guards, than go Jones and Smith at guards with Tatum at right tackle, for at least for the Georgia Tech game.
So you don't think, and I kind of presented this to you earlier today, and it's fine if you disagree. So we have Smith at right guard. Let's just say that's happening. You don't think there's any chance that it's because Tatum at tackle right now is better than Smith would be at tackle?
I cannot imagine a scenario where Trey Smith basically earned a starting spot his first day at practice where he's that good, but Marcus Tatum is that much better at him at tackle. Like, does that make sense?
It does totally make sense. The only thing I could think of, and this is from a guy who didn't play offensive line, didn't play organized football. I don't know how big the difference is between tackle and guard, especially maybe against the scheme we're going against. Maybe there's a chance, and this is just me trying to understand it out loud. Maybe there's a chance that Smith really, really clicked as an interior lineman, but when they thought about him at tackle, they were like, he's not going to be ready. And a guy like Tatum, who has had a little bit more time, is just a little bit better there. Let's keep Smith, like the risk of moving Smith out and he struggles a little bit. Let's just keep him at guard. We know he's going to be good. We know he can be an interior lineman. And that gives us Thomas and Boulware to rotate in the interior. I mean, it's a shame Drew Richmond was suspended, but they're just hoping Kendrick and Tatum can handle that outside. We have plenty of guys to rotate in, and we can just run the ball against Georgia Tech all game.
Maybe. But they've got to have to think that Richmond has been suspended for a while. I would think that's something that they've known about.
I agree.
I can understand putting Kendrick at right tackle and Richmond at left tackle and putting Smith on the interior. I don't have a problem with that necessarily. My issue here is that I think Boulware and Jones are better options than Tatum at this point, and you have a five-star offensive tackle who you're putting at guard, not even given a chance to play right tackle. I'm going off something I don't know about because the coaches obviously know more than I do, but it just feels like there's a missed opportunity there.
Right, and I actually like Coleman Thomas as long as he's healthy. So my first little permutation that I sent to you, and you actually suggested shifting Jones around and putting Boulware in, but the first thing that clicked with me was move Smith to tackle, move Jayshon to guard, put Coleman Thomas at center, and you still have Boulware to be flexible.
Yeah, that's a great option.
That would work as well, because I trust Coleman Thomas. I mean, when he got abused, he was hurt, and we know that.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because I'm excited about college football and I'm back in my, oh my God, you're such an optimist, give me a break mode. But I'm trying to see it as just Tatum's 6'6". He actually made a little bit of noise last year in camp. Maybe he can play some right tackle for a game.
I mean, and maybe he can. Maybe I'm an idiot and Marcus Tatum's going to be great and we can all laugh at me. It just doesn't make a ton of sense to me that Trey Smith was the number one offensive tackle by ESPN and at least a five-star offensive tackle by everybody, and you immediately move him to guard, and you need him. You need a right tackle, and you go with the three-star guy who came in the camp, came into his freshman year 250 pounds. It surprises me. And like I said, I think there's other combinations. Coleman Thomas at center, Jayshon at guard, move Smith to right tackle would work, or Boulware and Jones at guard. Like, I think either one of those would work well too.
Yeah, the only justification I have is that Smith clicked there. We have a star freshman right guard right now. We have a guy in Tatum we think can do it. Let's see what happens. Game two, hopefully Richmond's back, and it actually goes back to what they had in mind. But the one point you make is they've known about Richmond for a while. I mean, that didn't come as a shock. So maybe they should have switched, but
something else I thought about, Daniel, I didn't mean to cut you off, but maybe something else, too, that might have been a factor is Trey Smith will be beside a senior center in Jayshon Robertson or Coleman Thomas.
Yeah.
And so that can help point out, make sure he's in check, make sure you can point to everyone because Tatum's been on campus for over a year, so that might have been a factor, too.
Yeah, I really do think, and it's like we talked about on our Not Trey Smith episode, I really do think that they're sitting there looking at this guy and saying, holy crap, look at this guy at guard. Holy crap. He is a mean SOB. Let's keep him there. Like, we can figure this tackle thing out for a flipping game. Let's keep him there because Jones, Robertson, and then them helping Smith, and then Boulware and Thomas, if we start running in the second half, give me that all day. It's a shame that the tackle situation is going to be funky. I think Tatum can do it for a game. He's long. He's big.
Yeah.
I think they really just have faith that they think that's Trey Smith's best spot, and they're going to fiddle with everything but that, hopefully.
Well, and it was true that Tatum was a better road grader at this point coming into his freshman year than a pass blocker. There were the talk that he needed to improve his pass blocking. But it just surprised me to see Tatum get named as the starter.
Yeah, and I know that it's partly because of the suspension, but I guess the parallel would be So Derek Barnett comes on campus. He makes noise right away. And maybe not even to the extent that Trey Smith has, but let's say he makes noise right away at end. And he's a big guy. And let's say he was even a little bit bigger as a freshman. And then right before the first game, a good defensive tackle gets suspended. Rather than slide Derek Barnett inside and say, hey, he could make some noise at defensive tackle, they say, you know what? This guy's probably a top 20 pick as an end. Let's leave him at end and figure it out at defensive tackle. I think that's what's going on.
I think that's fair. I just think that right tackle and right guard isn't too much of a difference. At this point, I have more confidence in Denzel Bulwer and Jack Jones and even Coleman Thomas than I do Marcus Tatum. And I would rather take my chances with those guys in the interior and move Smith to outside and let him and just let him see what he can do there.
So you said that Tatum – let me just clarify because I want to know what to expect on Monday. Tatum, the reports when he got on campus when he started making noise were that he excels in the run game, he needs work in the pass game.
It was Smith. And Tatum's supposed to be pretty – like the one thing on Tatum was he needs to improve his strength. The one thing with Smith was he needs to improve his footwork as a pass protection.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I mean, I'm just trying to have faith in Tatum. Obviously, he's long. Like, the measurables look like a tackle, and that doesn't tell the whole story, but they do. And I think that Jay Sean being right beside Trey Smith for this first game is maybe a factor as well, and you pointed that out.
I think it is, and I think Tatum's got a bright future. I think he could definitely be a starter in the future. It just surprised me more so than anything else. I was pretty convinced there that Trey Smith would get a look at right tackle this year, and it makes sense too because you put him at right tackle. Kendrick's going to be the right tackle when Richmond comes back, and then you could just slide Smith over there. But you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, it's going to be a lot of pressure on Marcus Tatum, that's for sure. He definitely has the measurables. You know, he's 6'6", 281. He's got a huge wingspan. And I really liked him when they brought him in. You know, he played a couple games last year.
Yeah, and I think that he's a little bit light. But if we're running downhill and we're running really, really fast offense, if we're going to get to 80 or 90 plays, he might have the stamina to keep up with that and be fine. And I will say that given, like, the little change at the last minute with Richmond – I'm okay with Kendrick. That's obviously not ideal. I'm going to be watching that right side of the line just to see how it goes on Monday night.
Yeah, I think I'm actually pretty confident in the offensive line, more so than other people are because a lot of people are concerned. I think there's too much talent, and I think they were better last year than people want to give them credit for, that I'm not too concerned about the offensive line. I am now concerned about Marcus Tatum at right tackle, though.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching him Monday night. I'm sure you and I will be talking about it. That'll be a key part of the game because I think we're going to try and get Dormady in a rhythm, but we have to get John Kelly going. That's the end of our outreach questions. And Irwin Jr., thank you so much for that question. I thought that was really cool. That's obviously something to dream on. I would love to have health for these guys. I think it's interesting that kind of shows how war-torn we are. And kind of embattled. I just chose health on people. I just said, give me health on Kelly. Give me health on the offensive line. Just let me see this team. Like, I think I said it last year, and we had a lot of star NFL guys last year, and I think there's some on this roster. I like this roster. I'm not saying it's the best, but I like my dudes. Mm-hmm. Just give me health and let me see this team, this roster, reach its potential. And we haven't gotten to see that, and that's so frustrating.
I like this roster, too. I think it's a little underrated because of what happened last year. If they can stay healthy in the front seven, and if Mosley and Martin can improve some, I'm really excited. And I love seeing Nigel Warrior starting, like he's the true center or true starter. I love seeing that there. I like seeing Josh Palmer improve. I like knowing the fact Trey Smith's going to start at right guard. I'm really excited to see if Kongbo can step up. I think there's a lot of talent on this roster. I definitely think Tennessee can win the East. I think we'll talk about it a little more Sunday. But I really do believe that Tennessee has a chance to make noise this year and have a better season than last year.
So I'm going to go to around the NCAA now. Give us, I mean, just four quick questions. And this is sort of just your gut after doing these previews that we had. We looked at a lot of the stats. We dug into the rosters. Let's do some, like, gut predictions. Which top 25 team do you think is most overrated heading into the season?
I wrote down the team we talked about earlier. I wrote down LSU. Everyone's got them in the top 15.
I actually, and they have star players, so this could come back to bite me. I think it's USC.
That's not a bad pick. They're top 25, but top five, that is a little bit of a big jump there. And they only have 10 or 11 starters returning. Darnold's great, but are we sure Clay Helton's a good coach?
Yeah, I mean, they got to hope Darnold. And I think Darnold's real. It's not a doubt about that. I think Ronald Jones is real, but, oh boy, I mean, all it takes is a Cameron Smith injury on that defense, and they're really in for it, I think. And, I mean, I don't know. When you look at the rankings, you have them at four. We've gone through these rosters, man. We've combed through them. Do we really think USC is better than Clemson, Penn State, Oklahoma? I mean, I realize those are the teams right behind them, but I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. I think that's the team that's going to be furthest away from that ranking at the end of the season, even though they have a really light schedule. So that's going to save them, but I think they're overrated. And the LSU pick is what I expected you to say. That's a really high ranking.
It is. I also was not – I'm not totally sold on West Virginia as a top 25 team either. That feels like that can crash and burn any time with Dana Holgorsen, so I kind of wrote them down as an option also.
Interesting. Let's talk about that when we get to the pick 'em. So who do you think in the top 25 is the most underrated?
I wrote down two teams. I wrote down Virginia Tech and Miami. I really think they're both going to have 10-win regular seasons.
Yeah, I tried not to say Virginia Tech because I am just like all over them recently. They have a huge matchup against each other, but the main thing with those are probably both top 10 defenses in the country. And that right there, I mean, they're breaking in new quarterbacks, but a top 10 defense with a little bit of a soft schedule, that right there gets you a lot. Another one that I actually think is a bit underrated is Kansas State. I could just see them kind of sailing along and then ending up in the teens rather than in 20 to 25 range.
Nice. You know, I had them also on my list there. I don't know if they've got enough playmakers offensively. I know Jesse Hurts is a really good quarterback.
Yeah.
But that's a really good pick too. I thought this was interesting. So South Florida is ranked like 19, 20, 21. I could definitely see them being like a couple teams. Nobody really stands out. Everyone's got one loss. They're undefeated and sneaking into like the top seven or top eight and making noise too.
You know, another one that I think is worth mentioning, and they're right outside the top 25 in both, but I think we got to say it. I think TCU.
Well, I did in the Big 12 preview. I did mention them. I think that's fair. If Kenny Hill can cut down the turnovers and Gary Patterson fix that defense, 10-win season's not impossible for him.
Yeah, so I think there's some team. I mean, we always see somebody who's out of the top 20 or especially out of the top 25 shoot up those rankings, and they never look close to what they are preseason. So, I mean, it could start this weekend. So who has the best offense in the country? You don't have to worry about their defense. You don't have to worry about if they're going to get scored on. Who do you think has the best offense in the country?
So I actually went with Oklahoma State for this question. I think with Mason Rudolph and McCleskey and Washington on the outside, they returned three starters on the offensive line. I kind of felt like that was the pick there, was Oklahoma State.
Yeah, that's who I was going to pick, and I'm going to maybe try and switch it up. Because I just don't want to pick the same. Oklahoma's another option, but I think if the offensive line plays up, I think Penn State's going to be up there because they just went ridiculous on people last year, and they brought a lot of those guys back. I wouldn't pick them as the best. It's just hard to imagine Penn State with the best offense in the country when you compare them to a team like Oklahoma State. But I think people are kind of forgetting that all but one receiver's back, and they went nuts on some people last year. So I think that's a big one.
I'm just not a big Trace McSorley fan.
No, and like I want to be so skeptical of him, and I realize the long passes he was connecting on. Here's what it is. Those long passes are either three-pointers where it's a skill, and they figured it out because they have huge receivers – or they're fumbles and it's just pure luck. And I'm not saying there's no talent involved, but the fact that they hit so many is just luck, and it's going to normalize and regress to the mean, and they're going to look really ordinary again. So it's one of those two things. If it's three-pointers and that's a skill for that offense, they're going to be explosive again.
It just felt like he kept getting lucky, and that it kept feeling like it was all going to crash and burn, and it did in the USC game. He went twice, and the one got dropped, and then they picked him off and went down and kicked a field goal. And I just feel like you're going to see more of that. He only threw 9 picks last year. He probably should have thrown 15.
Yeah, and then the other two that I'll quickly mention, Louisville's obviously ridiculous if Lamar gets going, and I think Will Grier is going to be really good at West Virginia.
That's interesting. We'll talk about West Virginia in a minute because I think we might have differing opinions there.
Has the best defense in the country?
I went with Bama. I think that's the easy answer, yes.
Did you say Bama?
Yeah, I did say Bama. I think either Bama or Clemson would have the best defense in the country this year, and I kind of went with Bama just because it's the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I mean, that secondary just gets – they just seek the ball so well. If Ohio State still had their secondary, I'd throw them in there. I don't think I can. I think the other team that has to be mentioned is Florida State, because I think that secondary is real, and I think that they have some pass rush. And then lower down, I think you and I both agree, Virginia Tech and Miami are going to be in that mix. I don't know if you can put them with those top three yet, though.
I think that's fair. I think Miami's got a chance to be one of the top five defenses in the country, especially with those linebackers, Quarterman leading the way. I also think shout out to Wisconsin. They have some good players. They do lose TJ Watt, and that's a big blow. But Wisconsin should have a top 25 defense also.
So let's get to these pick'ems. Let's get to these pick'em games. So I have a question first. Do you want this year to pick straight up winners, or do you want to pick against the spread?
I think we should do both. We'll pick against the spread. We'll say who's going to win, but we'll say if they'll cover or not.
All right, so I'll go through, and I'll say a game, and we'll pick the winner, and then I'll give you the spread, and you can pick against that. Does that work?
Sounds good.
All right, so the first game, I was just trying to get to six on some of these, but this might be interesting. Maryland at Texas for the first game. I believe that's the noon game on Saturday.
So I think Texas is going to win. I still think they have more talent than Maryland. DJ Durkin did a good job at Maryland last year, leading them to a bowl, but Texas has more talent. And I'm going to go with Texas.
Yeah, that's one. I actually think Maryland's better than people realize. I don't think Herman's going to lose that game. So Texas is favored by 18.5 points. Do you think they cover that?
No, I do not think they cover that. That is a big spread. And I might even not participate in gambling and put like $10 on that if I could, because that is a huge spread. And I mean, Maryland's got a pretty decent team.
That's a really big line, and if Texas's running back isn't playing, they're not just going to be able to run downhill with Connor Williams and keep crushing people. So I could see it staying interesting longer than Texas fans would like, and I'll just be honest. I think Herman coaches better when he's the underdog than when he's favored by 18.5 points. North Carolina State versus South Carolina. This is kind of what starts that 3 o'clock window right before Michigan, Florida. So who do you think wins, NC State, South Carolina, which I think is a really interesting matchup?
I think NC State has too much on defense coming back, led by Bradley Chubb, that they'll beat South Carolina. I think it's going to be – this has a contest for game of the week. I really think it's going to be close, though.
So I'm going to pick South Carolina, and we differ there. It's hard because those are both teams that I think are like, hey, look at these teams. They're a little bit better than you think, and it's a shame they have to play the first week. But NC State's defense gets after you. NC State is favored by 4.5. Do you think they cover that?
I'll say they'll cover, but it's going to be like late field goal, late touchdown. I think it's going to be close right up till the end.
Yeah, so I'm picking South Carolina, so I'm not going to pick against that spread. But I do think that if NC State covers, it's going to be kind of an ugly game. It's going to be like 6 or 13 points. I don't think NC State's going to run away with it. And I have, again, very, very mixed feelings about faith in South Carolina this year.
If you want to put all your chips with Will Muschamp, you go right ahead and do that.
Yeah, I don't understand what's happening. Michigan versus, do you want to save that, Michigan, Florida?
No, we can pick that. That's fine.
Okay, so Michigan, Florida, who do you think is going to win?
I think Michigan wins. I would not feel as confident if Florida didn't have 10 freaking players suspended for the game. So I think Michigan wins. They have the returning quarterback. Felipe Franks was named the starter, so that'll be interesting to watch, though.
So I think Michigan's going to win as well, and I think Florida's going to have a good defense because they're Florida, but if Harbaugh has them hyped up and Chris Evans starts running all over the place, it's going to be really interesting, and I think it's going to be funny to watch Florida fans. Do you think Michigan covers the 5.5-point spread?
I do think they cover. Man, Florida lost 8 NFL draft picks on their defense this year. It could be, you know, I know Jim McElwain's a good coach. I know they've won the East the last 2 years, but it could be a potentially long season for Florida.
Yeah, that's the dirty little secret, I think, is Jim McElwain had these great defenses because Will Muschamp had his dudes in there. And I give him all the credit in the world for winning those titles, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of those dudes are gone, and he still has some guys that we've mentioned, like Duke Dawson. But if you got 1 to 3 quarterbacks, you kind of have 0 quarterbacks, and your defense might not be as strong. I think Michigan's going to play really well in this game. I've seen a lot of people picking Florida. I don't think I understand why, so that'll be interesting to watch. I'll go ahead and get to the kind of the main event, and then we'll do the Sunday-Monday games. Saturday night in the spaceship that is the Mercedes Stadium, Florida State versus Bama.
I really wanted to pick Florida State. You know that, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I really do. But I'm going to go with Bama just because I don't trust the Florida State offensive line to protect Francois the whole game.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing – I'm picking Bama as well. The one thing that we said might be vulnerable with Bama is the pass rush. And the one thing that you can accidentally do against that offensive line is rush the damn passer.
I mean, Francois got beaten up, just absolutely abused last year. And so, you know, look, we mentioned that we thought Bama might struggle a little bit in the pass rush, but they still have 5 stars everywhere rushing the passer. And I just have to see if Florida State can handle that. It's going to be really interesting to watch that.
I do think that Rashawn Evans, Sean Deion Hamilton, I think they're going to get after it. We just don't know yet. That secondary is elite. So is Florida State's. This is one that, like, I'm picking Bama, but I'm just excited to watch that game. So Bama's favored by 7 points. Do you think they cover that touchdown spread?
Yes, I do. But it's going to be late, something late, field goal, late touchdown, something like that. I got a quick Twitch question for you.
Do it.
Francois Hurts. Who has the better year?
Francois or Hurts?
Yeah, not the better player. Who has the better year statistically?
I mean, do I get to include rushing stats?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the whole thing. Yeah. Just who do you think is going to – how about this? Who finishes higher in the Heisman race?
Hurts.
Okay. I think Francois does. I think he's going to have a monster year.
You like Francois a lot really more do. Than I do. And I could totally be wrong. My opinion could absolutely be painted by the offensive line play. But you have a lot of faith in Francois. I like him as a passer. I don't know if he's going to be upright is a big thing.
That's completely fair. But I love him as a quarterback. I think he's tough. I think he can make all the throws. If Florida State can just improve that offensive line, they don't even have to be good. They can just be above average. I think Francois is going to have an absolute monster year.
Yeah. So West Virginia versus VT. This is Sunday evening. I think it's 7 or 7:30. I believe this is at FedEx Field, so it's a neutral site game. Interesting matchup with the States. Who do you think wins this game?
I think Virginia Tech has enough defensively to handle West Virginia. They are breaking in a freshman quarterback in Josh Jackson. That will play a factor, but they have Cam Phillips on the outside, return a couple starters on the offensive line. I think they have enough defensively that they'll get after West Virginia. You know, Greer hasn't played in a year and a half, so I like what Virginia Tech can do.
Do you think that they cover – Virginia Tech, I'm picking them as well. Do you think they cover a 4-point spread, which is a really small spread?
I do think they cover that. I think they cover the 4.
I actually am going to say they don't, and I realize it's a four-point spread. I'm picking a really, really, really close game. I think Greer's going to play pretty well. I think that Virginia Tech defense is going to overcome. They're going to have some ugly touchdown drive in the second half. They're going to barely win. I don't think that's going to color their season. I think Virginia Tech's going to be good. But this first game with the freshman quarterback, where Will Greer is on the other side playing really well, I think it's going to be close. I think Virginia Tech's going to win. I will say, if that quarterback for Virginia Tech comes out and is firing things all over the place and the offense looks like it did with Evans last year, Miami fans should start saying their prayers. I'll say that.
Are you buying Dana Holgorsen as a good coach?
I'm kind of buying him as what he is. Awesome, awesome, awesome offensively. I don't know if he'll ever have the bodies or the scheme to really do it defensively.
He did go 10-3 last year. I didn't realize West Virginia had such a good year last year.
They were really pretty good.
They were. It's just, and Will Greer was really good. So that's one of the most underrated storylines. I'm really curious to see how that pans out.
Yeah, so he won 10 games last year, and then the year before, he won 8 games, lost to Kansas State by 1, lost in overtime to Oklahoma State. So I think that's pretty real, and I think he has the quarterback. They lost Shelton Gibson, who was amazing, but I really think Greer's going to light it up. I am in love with the Virginia Tech secondary, and they're going to get tested that night because I think they're bigger and physical. I don't know how they'll do against the spread offense like this.
I just think that Virginia Tech defense is for real, and I think they'll have enough horses to slow down West Virginia and win.
So the last game, I mean, we're not going to do Tennessee yet. It starts after that West Virginia-Virginia Tech game. So we actually have two really good games on tap on Sunday. Texas A&M out at UCLA on the other coast. Who do you think wins this?
I'm going to let you go first. I'm kind of curious to see who you have.
I'm going to pick Texas A&M.
Okay, see, I have UCLA. So I think Josh Rosen has a bounce back year. I don't think UCLA is going to lose 8 games again. I think they can definitely make a bowl. I don't buy Texas A&M this year, so I'm going to go with UCLA.
So UCLA is favored by 3.5. Do you think they cover?
I do think they cover, yes.
Yeah, it's a really small spread. It's not a lack of faith in Rosen. I really, really like Christian Kirk. I really, really like the Texas A&M running back. No quarterback to speak of right now, so we're going to see how that goes. But they do have those playmakers on the offensive side. I don't know how much I trust that team to go out there and win, but I think they can beat UCLA. I don't know how good they are.
I think UCLA is going to have a bounce back year. I don't think they'll win the Pac-12 South. I still like USC there. But I definitely think they can win 8 or 9 games. It's going to be a really fun game to watch. Sunday night in UCLA, wonky things happened. Philip Fulmer 2008. But that'll be really interesting to kind of see and see what happens there.
Yeah, so that game's at 7:30. That's on Fox. And then let me see what time that Virginia Tech game starts, because those are really worth watching, people. That's also at 7:30. It's a shame they're at the same time. So 7:30 ABC. They should have made the West Coast game a little bit later, but whatever.
That person should be fired. There's no NFL game on. Just put it on at 3.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. So let's just to get the times right as we gear up for this final week, and this is the last thing we'll say. Maryland, Texas is the noon game. Slides into Michigan, Florida at 3:30 on ABC. If you're looking to flip to something else during that, you have North Carolina State and South Carolina. Obviously relevant for Tennessee, and two frisky teams that I think could play spoiler. That gets you through the 3 o'clock window. Right at the beginning of that close to primetime window at 6:15 on ESPN, Appalachian State goes to Georgia. Georgia's really good. We don't know if Kirby Smart can coach. Everybody that gave us trouble last year at App State is back. So I'm not saying it's going to be interesting. Maybe they get run all over. But that's something to turn on while you're waiting for the primetime games. And then at 8 o'clock, we have Florida State, Alabama. If that gets out of hand, 9:30, we have BYU, LSU. And BYU has a running back named Squally Canada. Fantastic. So you might want to tune in to
Fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. So we're at like 105, and it's kind of bothering me because we need like 5 more minutes to cover, and my OCD will stop kicking in. I'm going to give you a minute to answer because I have my answer. Top 25 team or outside a top 25 team that can make the playoffs. I think TCU, you mentioned them, I think TCU can make the playoffs. I like Kenny Hill despite the turnovers. Gary Patterson should fix that defense. Kyle Hicks is very underrated. And I think the Big 12 is not super tough this year, despite the fact how much we love Oklahoma State. I think if you had one team that was outside the top 25 that can make the playoffs, I'd go TCU.
If I had to pick one, I think TCU is a really good pick, especially because that conference just seems to get a little crazy and maybe they can win a championship game. If I had to pick another one, I'd like to look at their schedule, but just off my gut, I'd pick Oregon.
Ooh, interesting. I kind of like that. You really like Willie Taggart, don't you?
I like him. I think they actually have a quarterback in place who can play.
Yeah, Hubert.
They
good.
Have a superstar running back if he's just healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Taggart's going to help with the defense. I mean, they're in the harder side of the Pac-12, so they play Washington State, they play at Stanford, and they play at Washington. That is not easy by any means. But, I mean, all they have to do is win two of those. They don't have to sweep it or anything, and weird stuff can happen. They can get in the title game, and then I think they can beat a USC head-to-head. So it's not a prediction, but if I had to pick one to just surprise us, I like Taggart. I like that quarterback. It's a possibility.
Another interesting team just kind of throw out there, if they can replace their defensive starters, Colorado in the Pac-12 South, biggest competition, USC. USC could falter with some defensive injuries. They might be able to sneak into the Pac-12 title game and maybe could play. They were in there last year, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that USC really, they haven't lined up. But I think they're being overrated a little bit because of the Rose Bowl win, and people really like it when USC is good. For Oregon to do this, Mike Leach has to get weird, and Washington has to really, really, really regress. I trust Chris Peterson a lot, so I don't know if that's going to happen. And then they're not outside the top 25, but you said it. Miami could get frisky, and so could Virginia Tech.
If
they find the quarterback.
Yeah, if Miami can find the quarterback, I love their team. Richards is dealing with a hamstring injury, the wide receiver Amon Richards, but I actually really like that Miami team as a potential spoiler. They could definitely go into the ACC title game with one loss or undefeated.
Yeah, so I'll do one more question, then we'll wrap it up. We did this question with just the SEC specifically. I asked you if you could pick one player and put them on Tennessee for the year, who would you pick? And we mentioned guys like Minkah Fitzpatrick. We mentioned a pass rusher. If you could pick from everybody in the country and put one player on Tennessee this year, who would you pick?
Dexter Lawrence.
I think that makes sense.
I would go with Lawrence or maybe Amon Marshall, one of those two.
Just the best shutdown corner you can find.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. One thing that's exciting is on Saturday night, we should get to watch McFadden go up against Ridley a lot, which I think is going to be wonderful.
That will be absolutely fun to watch. Might even get like a Bo Scarborough, Derwin James one-on-one, which will be just that's those two badass dudes right there running into each other. That'll be super fun. I'm so glad college football's back. This is going to be such a fun season. I can't wait.
Yeah, this is going to be an awesome season. I'm actually excited to watch Michigan, Florida. Tomorrow night, Ohio State plays Indiana. Oklahoma State plays Tulsa. And Tulsa's not terrible, so maybe it'll be a game. Maybe Ohio State, Indiana will be a game because Ohio State won't be able to score, which will be funny. So I'm watching that with a couple friends in Columbus. We're just hanging out in an apartment watching football. And if it gets out of hand, hopefully I can switch over and watch my little darlings at Oklahoma State.
It's going to be really fun. Can't wait till tomorrow. We're going to post this on Friday, okay? And then we'll do the SEC preview post tomorrow. We did four podcasts this week, and we worked our asses off on this, Daniel, and I think our listeners are really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, this has been a blast. Hopefully we can come back with another mailbag soon. I don't think it'll work for Sunday, but I think it'll work after the first game. We'll just see what happens, see how much energy there is. On Sunday, we're going to come back and we're going to review the picks we made. We're going to talk about a little wrap-up from Saturday, from the games we've seen, what did we learn? That's going to be a theme this year. How does this affect the playoff? And then we're going to preview Tennessee, Georgia Tech. We're going to make our picks. We're going to start talk about Tennessee's season in more depth.
Thanks, guys. Can't wait for college football. Glad it's here. Go Vols. We'll see you all next week.